Welcome back to This Person I Met. My name is Kayla, and I'm the host of this podcast. If you don't know, this is the second part of Nikki's story, where she dives into how she turned a past of abuse and trauma into what she describes today as intentional living. Nikki doesn't hide from her past. She builds onto it and uses it as proof that she is worthy of all the happiness that she has today. Now in her 50s, she fights for others like her who deserve to heal and build their own future on their own accord with her education in social work, nonprofit called the Worthy Brown Girl Network, and podcast, The Worthy Well by Nikki G. If you haven't listened to the first segment, I suggest you do so now. Without further ado, here's the last part of Nikki's story. I know that you mentioned kind of worthiness is inherent in being human. Do you think there was a moment that kind of shifted you from survival mode into intentional living, as you mentioned?
Yes, I think it was that pivotal moment, the pivotal moment of the DUI, and having to really just look at myself and realize that, you know, you've been just in survival mode. Your unworthiness is you're standing in your own way. You're keeping your own self from your own destiny. I knew that I wanted to take the Worthy Brown Girl Network further. I knew that there were some things that I wanted to do, more speaking engagements, and I didn't want to be fraudulent. I felt like I was living fraudulently because I knew what I wanted to do with the women, but I wasn't really ready to be honest with myself, to go get the therapy, to deal with some of the things that happened in my childhood that caused me to make the decisions that I'm making. Mm-hmm. And until I could really, you can't heal what you don't reveal. I had to be honest with myself. I had to be honest enough to be vulnerable and tell my story. And that got me out of survival mode. I realized that I had to live intentionally. Mm-hmm. And for me, living intentionally was in my truth. Talking about what happened as a little girl, because it wasn't my fault. And just knowing that I don't have to live in survival. I can choose my own destiny, which is truth, and to walk into my own purpose.
Mm-hmm. So how do you personally define worthy outside of the inherent nature of it?
I define worthy as just knowing that I belong here. I have a voice. I am not defined by my past. I'm not defined by what happened to me as a little girl. I'm not defined by the fact that I didn't tell anyone, because sometimes people will victim blame. Why didn't you say anything? You should have said something. I am worthy because I was born. Mm-hmm. You know, my worth is, you know, every day I wake up is a reminder that there's more for me to do. Yeah. So my worth, I define it by, you know, being able to just acknowledge who I am, that there's only one Nikki, there's only one me, mm-hmm. and that I have a lot of wisdom, a lot to grow. I still am growing and learning, but there's a lot that I have learned. And there's a lot that I can share and pay forward. Mm-hmm. So that's what worth looks like to me, is mm-hmm. like, yes, I belong here. When I walk into the room, I walk in the room like I belong there, because mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah. Why do you think advocacy work, especially your type of advocacy work, is so important in today's like current state?
Sure. I believe it's important because people just need to know that they're not alone. Advocacy to me is being that voice to those that are silent, being that voice to someone that may not have the words to say, or maybe struggling with unworthiness, so they don't know that they have that voice. Mm-hmm. So when I go, I spoke at a vision board party last Sunday, and you know, I go in with my tulle skirts and my foo-foo and my makeup and all that, and they're so shocked to hear my story, because sometimes we judge a book by its cover. And I let them know, no, I used to be 354 pounds. I know what it's like to eat yourself, you know, trying to just numb it, and then to think that's figured out, and then you find something else to numb. I know what it's like to do that, because these women were trauma survivors that I was speaking with, that was doing the vision board. And so it's just important for them to know that they're not alone. And the more honest that I am with my story, and to let them know where I am now, that I'm working on my master's degree now, I have a job where I'm valued and loved, I get to speak to other women, I get to have this podcast, and I have my platform on social media. So you can rise above the ashes, you know. And I tell them, like, you know, when a house burns down, there's ruins around, and you sometimes see people with their house burned down, God forbid, and they go to look to see what ruins that they still can keep. It might be a trinket or something. And so there's still sometimes valuable things in the ruins. Mm-hmm. And you just have to go and find it. And so that's the part that I really enjoy about advocacy. Mm-hmm. And why it's so important right now, especially in this climate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you define intentional living in everyday life?
Intentional living is knowing how to say no. Intentional living is knowing how to set a boundary. Intentional living is getting up every day and putting yourself on the list. Intentional living is knowing the importance of self-care. Intentional living is not being defined by what other people think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I know that the Worthy Brown Girl Network focuses on women of color specifically. How do you think healing differs in people of color in comparison to maybe people with more privilege when it comes to their skin tone or their race?
How does it differ?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that women that are of color and that have gone through different things, they just have a different lived experience. It's just a little different as far as how they may hear it. I think the tone and the delivery of speaking to women that are of color that have gone through things has to be different, mm-hmm. because it's a different lived experience. They're not going to necessarily understand, the lifestyle of someone that is white and privileged in a certain socioeconomic status. It would be just tone deaf.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that it's all about the delivery, because there are white people that have gone through things too. They go through trauma too. You know, mm-hmm. what I mean? Everybody goes through pain. But I think when it comes to women of color, the fact that I have the lived experience and I know, I think there's just a different delivery of what I would say to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would understand it and be open, because my experience is similar to theirs.
Mm-hmm. And why did you choose to pursue a career? Because you did say that you were pursuing a master's in
social
work.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose to pursue a career as a therapist, specifically women who are trauma survivors?
Sure. Because I want to be what I didn't have. You know, mm-hmm. I want to be the therapist that I didn't even know I needed. I want to be the mentor, the navigator, the person that they can look at and say, oh my goodness, you know, if she can do it, I can do it. So coming into this realm of work almost 3 years ago, it let me know my true purpose. And I do believe that it's going to be direct care. Now, I just started my master's program at Howard University, and I'm learning about the macro and the other areas that are not direct practice. For now, my passion is direct practice. But through my studies, if I change my mind and I want to go macro, maybe I want to work in a different area, I'm going to leave that open as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I definitely want to do direct practice and be a therapist for trauma survivors, because I want to be what I didn't know I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And therapy has helped save my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in it. I go on a regular basis. And when I feel like I need more than once a week, I do that.
Mm-hmm.
I check in with myself. And I really want to be an advocate for therapy in our community, because in the Black community, it's like, oh, just go to church and pray, or just go pray. I grew up in the church and went through a lot of pain from people that were going to church.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, it's okay. You can have God in therapy too.
Yeah.
And so I want to dispel that, and I want to break that stigma,
uh-huh.
that, because in Black, in our community, oh, you're crazy. Oh, they're crazy. And it's like, that's not what it is. And so that's why my path right now is direct care trauma survivors, because of what I needed and how it helped me.
Mm-hmm. And through your personal experience with therapy and maybe what you're pursuing for your career as well, do you see any gaps in the mental health field specifically that you hope to fill?
I think that it's come a long way. The fact that therapy is talked about so much now, and it's almost like in style, it's almost like trendy therapist. People just freely say therapist now. They freely say without shame. I feel like we've come a long way. Any gaps? I would like to see, especially working with people that are formerly incarcerated, I would like to see, because a lot of the children that were left fatherless or motherless for so many years, whatever,
mm-hmm.
I would like to see a little bit more therapy for the children that had to grow up without their father or their mom,
mm-hmm.
for so many years. So if anything, and maybe it's there and I don't know about it, I would love to do more family reunification therapy.
Like family therapy?
Family. Like, you know, say for instance, you know, I see there's a woman that may have been in prison for 5 or 6 years, and the grandmother was raising the child, and now the mother is back. You know, a lot of times there's some distance there. There's some resentment there. And like, it would be nice to do a little bit more of the the family reunification and the therapy as a group, mm-hmm. you know, because I think that, you know, there's just so much uncertainty that sometimes the child is not even told the truth of where the mother and the father is. So I would love to see that, because even though they come back and they get out of prison, sometimes the children, it's just this distance there, and it's this, they don't trust. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a lot of therapy that the young kid needs as well. Mm-hmm. Feeling abandoned.
Yeah.
You know, things being said about their parents when their parents are inside, people speak bad about their parents.
Yeah.
You know, so I would like to see more of that. I think that's very important to go along with the whole reentry, that mm-hmm. that should just be a part of it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And is that something you want to add to The Brighter Way, or something that you guys might plan to do?
Yeah, well, we do family reunification now. It's not, and we do have a clinical director on staff now. Mm-hmm. So that is something that we're trying, because first we try to get them to work on themselves, because we do have an in-house therapist. But as far as the families, yes, we are trying to get into that a little bit more, but we're trying to just ease it, because some of them are coming out like, therapy. So we're trying to first let them start going, mm-hmm. and then as they go and get comfortable, yes, we want to start trying to bridge that gap.
Mm-hmm. And now to move on to the conclusion part, is there a story from your personal life, or are there moments in your everyday that remind you of why your mission matters?
Well, I know that my mission matters from the lives that are being touched. When a woman comes in here from being either in the county for 6 months or being in Huron Valley for 10 years, when they come in and they're so downtrodden and they're so broken, and they come and we work goals, and they start to get those small wins, and they get the job, they get the place to live, and they end up going to school, or, you know, I get to see them just come like from a wilted flower to this just beautiful rose. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a reminder of why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gives me, because sometimes the job can be hard. So hard meaning it's a hard job. You know, you're dealing with human beings, you're dealing with people. And sometimes our heart is bigger than the scope of what we can do.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have funding to get everybody housing. We don't mm-hmm. have everything that we need. And it hurts sometimes when you see the need and you only can do so much. But mm-hmm. you get replenished by the stories that you hear. They'll come in and say, oh, I got that. I was able to go do this, because we make little mini goals. It could be, okay, I need to get my new ID. I need to get this. And we break it up in sections so that they can get those small wins. Mm-hmm. And when I see the light come on after seeing them, because when they first, on day one, it's like some of the lowest times.
Yeah.
But as you keep seeing them rise, because they show up, and a lot of times they try to give us credit. It's like, no. You showed up. And you did what you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we're here to support you, but we can't do anything for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the reminder is for me, that I'm doing the right thing, and the reminder that this work is valuable based on those seeing the wins from the members and seeing them transform before our eyes.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned while building your platforms of both your podcast, your nonprofit, and your work here at A Brighter Way?
Sure. Some of the biggest lessons I know for sure is I have to stay out of my own way. And what that looks like is not worry about what other people may think. Because I am a woman of a certain age. Here I am, 53. I'm doing social media content. I'm going to start a podcast. I'm doing things where it can be perceived as, well, what is she doing? And why is she doing this now?
Mm-hmm.
And who does she think she is? You know, that kind of thing. So I've learned to push past what I may perceive as judgment,
mm-hmm.
and do it anyway. The work that I have to do is too important to worry about some Joe Blow who's not doing anything with their life, worried about what I'm doing. I can't. The work is too needed, and it's too much that I have to do to worry about that. So I've learned a lesson of I need to do what I know that I'm put here to do, and I have to push past the fear of judgment. And I've learned that consistency is everything with my social media content on TikTok and on Facebook, on Instagram. Consistency. There have been times when I may was having a low moment. I wasn't feeling the best, but there was this message that I knew I wanted to talk about. And I push past my own feelings and do that post. And then I end up being encouraged by some of the feedback I would get.
Mm-hmm.
So pushing past even my own personal feelings, because even with this job, no matter what I'm going through, I leave it out there. And when I come here, it's all about the members.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how to be consistent and learning how to push, even if I may not be feeling like it, because the work is just that important to me. And just also learning that there are going to be some things that I just don't know, but I can ask questions and I can fail and fall back and fall forward. Because coming into this space, my colleagues have all done several years in prison. I'm the only one that's just as impacted. I never did time in prison, just the jail. And so that makes, I'm in a different spot than they are. They understand and know things differently than I do. And so there have been some times when I had to learn some things, and sometimes we rub up against each other's triggers. We're all traumatized here. We're all members as well.
Yeah.
Because, we all have been through it. Our CEO, Adam Grant, did 27 years. Our director did 16. Mr. Johnny did 45. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. And so for some of them, it's their first job coming here.
Yeah.
And I did like all these years in corporate or whatever. I've never worked with a group of people in this situation. So I had to learn some things. I had to have a tougher skin. Mm-hmm. And then they had to learn, how to deal with me, because I am a little bit more sensitive. I didn't have to put on that Teflon that they did inside because I never went through it. Mm-hmm. So there was that. But, we're family, and no matter what, we're here for each other, and we love each other, and we do understand that we're all coming, with our own traumas. But our greater good is to make sure that the members are seen and heard and valued and know that despite what they've gone through, that their life matters and they can pick up and they can move forward in life.
Mm-hmm. And for a final question, is there a message you'd like to leave the audience with?
Yes. I knew this was going to be the one that I couldn't think of. Yes, I just would like to say that, in this life, we are allowed to rest. We are allowed to say no without apology. We are allowed to heal. What I do know for sure is that the trauma was not our fault, but the healing is our responsibility.
Yeah. Period. That's it. Okay, thank you, Nikki. That was very beautiful.
Thank you.